Welcome to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. We are going to come to order. We do currently have a quorum, so I will officially call the meeting to order and ask for approval of the minutes for March 25th, 2015. Representative Peterson moves approval of minutes for March 25th, 2015. Are there any additions or corrections? Hearing no additions or corrections? Nope. All right. None. All right. We will not be doing that. All right. We'll move that.
I'll move it.
No?
I'll move it.
All right. You won't. All right. We're going to move ahead with our presentation. We have Minsure presentation. We have Scott Light's CEO from Minsure on the list, Katie Burns, Chuck Johnson, Jesse Ullman, and Scott Peterson. We will begin presentation, and if it's okay, if Mr. Lights would like to make a opening comment, we could go ahead with that, and then probably go to member questions as we move forward. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lights. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, and members of the committee. My name is Scott Lights. I'm the Minsure CEO. I want to thank the committee for the opportunity to talk a little bit about the plan as it relates to building out the Minsure IT system moving into the next open enrollment period. As the committee probably knows, we concluded our second open enrollment period for Minsure on February 15th. And for this open enrollment period, we really had a very heavy focus on improving what we call sort of the front end of the system. And what that really is the consumer-facing side of the system, where consumers come in and enroll into coverage and find out if they're eligible for Medicaid, if they're eligible for MinnesotaCare, or if they're eligible for a qualified health plan with a tax credit. What we found this year with that focus is that we had a dramatically improved customer experience. People were able to largely get through and apply. They found much shorter call center wait times, and that focus really did have an impact this year. But we also know that there are a number of areas that need to be improved in the system. Certainly some on the customer side, but many, many on what we call the back end of the system. And what I mean by the back end of the system is that part of the system when a person has come through and enrolled into coverage and they've made it through, there are still a number of functions that oftentimes need to occur that might be things such as the ability of county workers to manage cases once a person is enrolled in Medicaid. Right now, they have ability to do that, but it's a very cumbersome process, and that needs to be improved. The ability of accurate information to be electronically transferred to the health plans is going to be an important function as we move forward to ensure that the plans are getting accurate, timely, and non-cumbersome information for them to work with. And we also have some key partners, navigators, who work to enroll people into coverage, brokers and agents who do the same, who want to work directly into the system, and they don't have that functionality right now. And so as we move forward, it's going to be very important that we build out those functionalities so that we're able to make sure that Minnesotans are able to enroll into coverage. One extremely important thing to ensure that this is delivered is a good governance process for the IT build, one that has clear roles, responsibilities, and timelines. It's not a real sexy part of it, but having really good governance over an IT project is really very, very important. When I joined Minsure in December of 2013, and it was clear to me, and I think Auditor Nobles really raised this in the work that he brought forth, that there wasn't as clear a governance process as should have been in place, and probably some underutilization of our partners at Minute Services. We have been working over the course of the past several months to really build out that governance process. It's important to remember that this is a shared IT system. It's often called the Minsure system, but it's really a shared system between DHS, which is responsible for doing eligibility determination on people enrolling in Medicaid or the MinnesotaCare program, and Minsure, which has responsibility for ensuring that tax credits are getting to people who are enrolling in qualified health plans or commercial coverage. To ensure that we have a good governance process, we have formed an executive steering committee, which is ultimately responsible for prioritization. One of the things that we felt was very, very important is that we have in place a process that was making sure that we were able to take the various resources that we had and prioritize those and make decisions in a timely way. That steering committee is made up of two members of DHS, two members of MNSHR, and two members of Minute Services, plus one person from the counties. And so we have direct county representation on the work that we're doing to prioritize. We've also really developed a process where Minute Services is the lead on working with the vendors on the ground. I think one of the things that was confusing early on was it wasn't always clear who had direct responsibility of working with the vendors. That's very clear now that Minute is that single face representing the IT build-out. We've also involved during this process heavy engagement with, in addition to having a member of the counties on our executive steering committee, heavy engagement with the counties. We meet with the county steering committee on a biweekly basis to ensure that we're hearing their priorities, their challenges with the system. We meet with the health plans on a weekly basis, and we meet as an executive steering committee twice a week to ensure that we're continuing the work. As the committee knows, we applied for and received federal funding to accelerate this IT build related to the system. Minute in a moment will give you a view into how these dollars are being used and the areas that we're focusing on for functional improvement. We were awarded an adjustment to our grant of approximately 90% of the available adjustment, which was very good news for Minnesota and for MNSHR system. I think the federal government continues to see MNSHR as a good investment, but also seeing it as a work in progress that needs to be accelerated and improved, and so we appreciate their confidence and their support. We do believe this is likely the last opportunity for states to apply for funding. We do have, as I've mentioned, the additional work to do, so we felt it was prudent to seek this funding as it gives us the capacity to further invest in the IT system on a much more expedited timeline than otherwise would have been available. It's also important to remember that there are parallel tracks of work going on right now. Scott Peterson will give you that update in just a moment. We have a lot of work to do, and we're working on all fronts to accomplish the planned improvements. We're scoping our priorities, and we're trying to be very smart about that. We're keeping a reserve to address contingencies that come up during the development, and we're bringing on consultants to help and staffing up to do that work. In closing, we believe, again, this is probably the last opportunity we're going to have to apply for federal funding. We do have this additional work to do. We feel that the process that we've put in place to ensure that the project is properly managed, scoped, and governed is one that will allow us to be able to hopefully deliver on the priorities that we've established. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Chuck Johnson and Scott Peterson to give you more information.
Thank you, Mr. Lights, and if you'd like to walk through that, I know members probably have a lot of questions. So I see you have a presentation for a minute, and do you have an idea of how long that presentation would be, approximately?
Mr. Chair, it's probably about 45 minutes.
Okay. Why don't we save that for the end, why don't we go to Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. Chuck Johnson, I serve as Deputy Commissioner for Policy and Operations at the Department of Human Services. I wanted to speak to the Department of Human Services' interest in the IT build and the support for the investment in that IT build that Mr. Lights talked about. We're projecting that by 2016, 90% of the cases and individuals that will be in and being served through the MNSHR IT system are public program enrollees, medical assistants in Minnesota Care. This is a really important system to our business and to the future where we're going in DHS, and we need it to succeed. Committee members are aware of the proposal we brought forward in 2013, which found support here for modernizing our systems. That is a long-term vision, building an integrated human services system, working closely with the counties on that. This is really the first part of that. This is how we take from our aging 25-year-plus-old systems, move into modern technology that allows consumers to be able to interact directly with us, to apply online, to make changes online, things that we can't do in our systems now and that we're making progress toward with the MNSHR system, but clearly have additional progress to make. We're not where we need to be with the system from a DHS perspective. We clearly have some needs that need to be met, and Mr. Peterson goes through his description. You'll see that those are some of the highest priority items that we're working on with the build in 2015. As Mr. Light said, we have seen improvements in the front end of the system, and we have seen improvements in terms of some of the issues that we experienced at the end of 2013 and early part of 2014 with problems in the system, many of which were noted in the audit that the OLA did on public program eligibility. We need the improvements on the back end, as Mr. Light said, and that's critically important to DHS, in particular because of the role that the counties play in supporting our programs. The counties are really one of the two critical sort of needs that we have here, is getting the system in a position where they can effectively manage cases and do their jobs. And that's the opportunity that we have here for DHS. Clearly, one of the great things about where we are now is a lot of people, public program as well as commercial, can come onto the system, apply, and come straight through without needing touch. That's a relief for the counties, and it's certainly beneficial to the individuals themselves. But counties right now have a couple of issues that are high priorities for us to get fixed this year. One is the ability to make life changes. We can make life changes in the system. It's just very onerous to do it. And we need to build a simpler way for people to go into the county workers to go into the system and make those changes so that we can have accurate eligibility determinations. Secondly, counties are struggling some with some of the case management functionality, in particular the tasks that are given to them by the system, and we need to organize that better so counties can manage their caseloads and keep on top of cases going forward. And so we see the counties as a key constituency to try to make these improvements in 2015 and to be able to provide the customer service that they want to provide and we need them to provide to our medical assistants and Minnesota Care recipients. Secondly, we need to focus as well on issues of program integrity within our programs. And clearly, the county piece is a piece of that. The county's ability to manage their cases, make the life changes, are critical to program integrity. In addition, we also need to continue work that we're doing in the eligibility areas. Many of those issues have been resolved. We're actually in a pretty good place in terms of electronic verifications in the system. That's a strength of where we're at now. But we do need to do work on our Minnesota Care invoicing process, and that's a particular concern that we have, and again, you'll see as a priority within the 2015 build to ensure that we have a way of tracking accurately when people have paid their premiums, haven't paid their premiums, and should and shouldn't be getting coverage. And so those are important issues from the integrity side. As Mr. Light said, this is a work in progress, and we view it as progress we need to make in 2015 to move ourselves forward. As you're aware, there is a funding issue before this committee in the governor's budget related to support from insurance in the DHS budget that's critical to ensuring we're able to make these changes in 2015. And we ask for your support on that because we need that in order to make these improvements for public programs, for the counties, and for the direction we want to go with DHS. I also do want to emphasize what Mr. Light said about governance. We have in place a strong governance. I think from a DHS perspective, we're particularly pleased and find it really important that Minute Services is in the lead on the IT side, that we have a single point for people to go to and for information to be funneled through. That is a key point to finding success in this project, as well as building on the Cross-Agency Executive Steering Committee and what the leadership that we're able to provide to ensure that there are strong decisions being made and those decisions are being followed through at the lower levels and having county representation in that group so that we're getting that county voice in the room on those important prioritization decisions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I would just, you know, before I think it looks like the minute presentation might go on a little bit longer, and I understand that we've made some progress in that area and want to certainly get an update on that. But I think primarily just looking in kind of the upcoming weeks, looking at our budget and our state programs, we want to get a feel of where MnSure is, and obviously we have several bills in the legislature in both the House and the Senate that are really trying to figure this out, looking at the financial sustainability of the program itself, questioning that, and also questioning whether or not and how Minnesotans are being treated within the program. And I just want to start out with a question for Mr. Leitz. And you know, after the rollout and all of the press coverage and the difficulties and everything that we've had moving forward, we saw a budget come out in January for the program that really has, from the public side, or from the private side, not reached its goals. In terms of February 2013, of our predicted goals for the private side to be able to finance the thing, we're looking at 600,000 predicted QHPs. We're now at around 60,000. We've looked at, as we're looking at today, the more than, you know, this the request for a bailout from the federal government for the program of more than $100 million requested for just this year. And as I think you've said and probably accurately indicated, this is probably the last bailout we're going to get from the federal government. Also looking at additional state money for moving ahead and really causing us to question the financial sustainability and indeed viability of the program moving forward. And as I looked at the report and I looked at the budget for the year, and over the weekend I looked at the last two MNsure board meetings on YouTube, I just have an understand. It just looks like there's a disconnect between what I'm seeing from the board meetings, what I'm seeing from the reports and the updates versus the reality for people trying to deal with this, trying to navigate through the system, for legislators trying to understand the program of where MNsure is at. And the MNsure board meeting itself, the last one that I watched on YouTube, and I granted probably have more extra time than average person to do that, but starts out with a MNsure success story and talks about all of the progress that's being made. And it just looks like this is happening in a bubble somewhere that is out of touch with what I'm seeing, in my email in basket from constituents, what I'm seeing from the budget. And do you think there's a recognition of, is there a situational awareness that is changing at MNsure of where we're really at?
Mr. Chair, so a couple things I think in response to that. I think first of all, we're the first to acknowledge that first of all, we do believe substantial progress has been made. But we're also the first to acknowledge that the system is not perfect and that there need to be additional improvements. I think that was very much the point of what I was trying to drive at in my opening remarks, which is that there has been progress that's been made. We were pleased to have enrolled more new people into the system this past year than actually renewed into the system, which was different than any other state or the federal government, and that those improvements have made it easier for consumers. But that isn't to say that in every single case it's a perfect system. I would never say that, and I'm not going to say that. There are substantial improvements that need to be made. Fortunately, through the enrollment that we did receive, we were very close to the target that we had set for enrollment. You referenced the earlier numbers, which I think were probably built into the original fiscal note that was done. You know, those numbers were obviously they were fundamentally not right. And, you know, I can't speak to the original fiscal note. What I can speak to is what we now know from facts on the ground and where enrollment has come in. And we, like any business organization, now have the responsibility of taking what we know about enrollment and revenue that's coming in and then matching that to the expenditures that we make. And in the budget that you have in front of you that you referenced, we make adjustments to that budget to reflect the reality of where we now know enrollment has come in. And to adjust our expenditures in a way such that we have a balanced budget. So we do believe it's sustainable over time. We do believe that the enrollment growth has been strong. We also acknowledge that there are changes and improvements that need to be made to the system, and very much that's what the next year as we head up into next open enrollment is really going to be all about.
And Mr. Lights, is about how many people do you think will be in QHPs after the open enrollment, and is that reflected in your budget?
Mr. Chair, it is. It's reflected, the budget that's in front of you for the budget that was submitted to the legislature on March 15th was reflective of the enrollment that came in during the open enrollment period. So it's we had made a projection in January of what we anticipated enrollment would be. We actually have actual enrollment, and that's reflected in the budget document that you have.
And do you recall, Mr. Lights, after the open enrollment period, so right now we are in March of 2015, open enrollment will be through next January. Do you have a head count of what you are predicting? We're going to be, if we're at 60,000 now, is it 100,000? Is it 200,000? Or
Mr. Chair, through the end of the year, we're anticipating around 60,000 individuals.
All right. Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you want them to testify a little bit more? You're open to questions, right?
Questions.
Okay. Thanks for your testimony. And it's CEO Scott Light.
Oh, thank you. I got a hard time making it through life without you, Deb. And Deputy Commissioner Johnson. You know, I'm not going to give you my thoughts or opinions today. I'm going to quote from a Minsure board member, okay? And, you know, CEO Lights, I know you became the captain of the Titanic after it hit the iceberg, right? So I understand that. But just to quote from this former board member regarding Minsure, the vision was flawed, the IT strategy was a disaster, Minsure needs to change, and I should know, I'm a Minsure board member. What's the definition of madness? We spent $140 million. We're about to spend $89 million more, $99 now, and then another $11 million. To show for it, we have a mediocre Minsure website and an IT mess at the Department of Human Services, plowing millions more down the same path. He goes on to say, let's admit that Minsure and the DHS need a divorce. Papering over massive IT needs at DHS and calling it Minsure isn't accurate. It never was. The DHS computer system is not Minsure, and it shouldn't be. Federal funding or no, that legislative vision of one massive IT system doing all things for all people was a terrible IT blueprint. He concludes, we need to live separate lives. Minsure needs to date someone other than DHS. There are many successful exchanges. There are private sector solutions, unbelievable, that do comparative shopping better and cheaper. Going our separate ways could be cheaper for both of us, and the DHS will be fine. Remember, we have $89 million to get us both on our feet. We should be able to make do. Not a word of that was my own opinion or conclusion. That was a board member of Minsure. Given that type of assessment by a Minsure board member, I have a hard time even voting for one more nickel for you out of the general fund, to tell you the truth. And are you prepared to make major changes and recommendations based on this criticism and others from the public and from the people who are trying to participate in your website?
Mr. Lights.
Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen, so a couple things in response to that. First, obviously there's a variety of different opinions that exist on the board. I think that's good, healthy discussion that is there among the board members. And that particular issue hasn't necessarily come to a vote, per se, among the board. But I would say that that does reflect the fact that the board is diverse and it does have a variety of different thoughts and opinions related to it. And certainly the member that you quoted has strong opinions and some viewpoints that he carries. One of the things that was envisioned, I think, both here but also in every state and at the federal level, is that you do need a good front door for people to come through, And what I mean by that is you want to have the ability of a person, regardless of where what their income level is, where they live, what their life situation is, to be able to come in to a system through a single door and be able to get an eligibility determination, whether that's for Medicaid, whether that's for MinnesotaCare, for the qualified health plans. And then beyond that, I think there is ways that you can look at structuring a system that might take us down a variety of different paths. And I think that that's part of what the discussion should be moving forward. I think it's important that we maintain the ability of people to be able to know that they're going to get have to go to a be able to go to a single place to get that eligibility determination. And then I think part of the discussion moving forward is going to be how do you then best deliver the services to people, whether they're eligible for Medicaid, MinnesotaCare, or qualified health plans. And I would say that it's important for us collectively as organizations working with the legislature to ensure that we're taking a look at all the available options that are out there and then making some decisions around which are the best, most cost-effective ways for us to deliver on what we're hoping to do for Minnesotans, which is to get them into good, affordable health insurance coverage.
Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that response. Do you share any of his concerns that MnSure and DHS need to be separated and that we need to stop trying to create this monstrosity of IT that simply is not working?
Mr. Leitz.
Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen, I would say from my perspective, the most important thing that we need to ensure that we're doing is making sure that we're having good, accurate eligibility determinations for individuals as they come through. Right now, that's done through a single vendor that we have with IBM Curium, and that actually is working fairly well within the system. I think some of the pieces beyond that we need to continue to look at and ensure that we're doing, but I think that the most important thing that we have is making sure those eligibility determinations are done through a single portal.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Grunhagen.
Well, Mr. Leitz, the question I ask is, do you share the vision of separating DHS from MnSure?
Mr. Leitz.
Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen, I would say this. I, as a CEO of an organization, report to a board. My board hasn't necessarily taken a position on that particular aspect. So I'm not trying to dodge your question at all, Representative. Please understand the position I'm in as the way this organization was structured. I kind of take my direction from that board, and the board hasn't taken an official position on that particular aspect.
Representative Grunhagen.
A final comment. You know, in the private sector, which I'm at, and I own my own business, when things don't work out, I suffer lower income, okay? And, you know, if I don't service my clients, keep them with a competitive product, I lose money. They go someplace else, okay? I don't know of any private company anywhere that would put up with this amount of incompetence, and I again acknowledge you got onto the Titanic after it hit the iceberg, without consequences. If, you know, my understanding is you gave out bonuses to board members, I think that should be paid back. I think people should take about a 25% reduction in their pay, and then I'll think about helping you out in some way. But to continue to bloat this system and flush good money after bad money is just totally unacceptable. Mr. Chair, I've got about 8 to 10 other questions, but I'll take my turn.
Representative Pearson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming before this committee. I am a freshman member here of the legislature, and you know, I've been trying to wrap my head around a lot of these things, and MnSure is certainly one of those issues. When I was on the campaign trail, it certainly came up, and one of the issues that I've been having, though, is actually just even trying to find the right information. So where can a person actually find the budget?
Mr. Leitz.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the budget is on MnSure's website, and individuals can search that and find that on the website.
Representative Pearson.
So on that website, there's like specific breakdowns of where the funds are being allocated?
Mr. Light.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is correct.
Would you say that the budget that exists right now, is it in line with what the budgets are in other states that have similar... a similar website, similar process?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I would say, while I haven't done a direct comparison of our budget relative to those other states, from a scope perspective, meaning given for our population base relative to other states, I would say it's probably fairly similar, yes.
Representative Pierce.
But you haven't done that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, not in every state's case, no.
Have you, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Have you done it in some states' cases with similar populations and whatnot?
Mr. Light.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I'm certainly aware of where the general scope of other states' budgets are of similar populations, and we're in the general vicinity of those budgets.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Lights, and I'm just gonna reference it. It's a budget that if this is all it is, it looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pages. And it's a kind of a big 14-point font spreadsheet without a great deal of detail when I compare it to our budget books of what we have to put out with line items for every expenditure for the budget that we're going to be putting together. All the members of this committee are going to have a big binder about 5 inches thick of all of our spending line items. And I think that there's a fair amount of discomfort with both this budget as well as the request for additional dollars from the federal government with maybe a couple of sentences relating to IT and then a $60 million appropriation after that. It kind of looks like a coloring book version of a budget that we probably would want more detail on, because these are scarce dollars, whether they're federal dollars or state dollars. These are dollars that could be going to help people with their health care, with their spend down of their assets, people making really difficult life decisions. That the accuracy of this is really in question. I think Representative Pearson's question is a valid one, because it really looks at how much oversight and detail and transparency we actually have over tens of millions of dollars, that we really don't have a whole lot of idea of where that's going, because we don't have direct legislative oversight. If we were to question, let's say, a $4 million or a $24 million expenditure within DOT or within DNR or any other agency, we would have the ability to bring up line and spreadsheet and number expenditures that tie that back to a budget and tie that back to a chain of decisions that's extremely accountable. We might not always like it or agree with it, but it's extremely detailed and accountable. And I'm just wondering if there is oversight. There's obviously oversight improvements planned for MNsure. If that's one of the goals, is to be able to provide people better information about your spending decisions and about how you communicate those decisions to policymakers and the public. Mr. Lights.
Mr. Chair, just so I understood what the question was, were you asking about our ability to provide detailed information at a line item?
Well, Mr. Lights, I just think, dollars and thousands, 93,000, that's a lot, in thousands. If in moving forward, one of the improvement goals, oversight is obviously one of the things that the Senate is looking at, it's one of the things that the House is looking at, it's one of the things that the governor is looking at, that the autonomous nature of MNsure has been questioned from a governance standpoint of its board and also from an accountability standpoint. It's a different animal in that we don't have the direct kinds of oversight that we do in other agencies. And I think one of the things that's confusing or irritating is a budget that is very large and vague at the same time. So I think that that's one of the things that I've heard repeatedly over the last year, of a kind of a out-of-touch agency, quasi-agency that doesn't really get how much money it's getting or what the oversight responsibilities are back to the legislature. So if there are there any on your to-do list, if you had 20 improvements to make within oversight, accountability, and transparency, would communication and maybe adopting a more standard MMB practice for how you present your budget to the legislature, taxpayers, and stakeholders?
Thanks for clarifying, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. And you're right. We are obviously by statute a little bit different of beast here, a little bit different of an animal. I certainly have no concerns about that whatsoever. I think we strive to be an extremely accountable and transparent organization. So I would certainly have no concerns about us adopting an approach that is consistent with whatever would be useful to legislators in the committee.
And Mr. Leitz, I'll just refer you to the CMS request for additional dollars that was put forward by MNsure that has really good detail of what you would like to spend the money on. And in this document has a breakdown of how the budget dollars were to be spent. You asked for a little over $100 million and an extra bailout and how you wanted to spend that money from a federal grant. And actually that was fairly well detailed as I look at the document in how you were going to spend the money and what the request was. So I'm just wondering if there's a standard for application of grants from the federal government that says this is what MNsure needs to do. We want to improve customer experience and we want to help people and treat them better, and this is how we're going to spend the $100 million. That we don't see that as at the legislative level. We get more of a book report version of what your budget would be. So the juxtaposition from the CMS communications that you have with the federal government versus the communications that you have with the legislature on your budget.
And again, Mr. Chair, we're very happy to provide whatever level of detail committee and legislators would like. Obviously, we're in year two of a new organization and made improvements substantially over how we did the reporting last year. I think we heard some concerns about that, attempted to incorporate those concerns, give a sense of FTEs, give a sense of spend. If there's a process that the legislature would prefer us to follow, we're certainly open to doing that. I have no concerns about that.
Thank you, Mr. Leitz. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, I just think it's interesting. I was had the privilege or the obligation, whatever it was, to serve on the original planning committee and was appointed to the MNsure Governance Task Force. And it was a bipartisan group with people from outside involved parties as well. And it was interesting that at that time it was actually the private sector and some Republican representatives who really were absolutely opposed to this being a state agency, and they were the ones who insisted on it being exempted from all these onerous requirements on bidding and other things, and they wanted it, you know, more accountable to a board rather than to a governor. And it's just, you know, your perspective changes with time and experience, but it's been interesting to see how this has evolved with others. But I think in terms of the issue that was raised by Representative Grunhagen about someone suggesting a divorce between MinnesotaCare or MNsure and the DHS eligibility system. And the way I look at it is I think Minnesotans want to know everything that they're potentially going to make a choice about in health insurance coverage and what are their options. You know, what can they buy on their own? What could they buy with a, you know, would they qualify for a federal premium tax subsidy? Would they qualify for the sliding fee premiums of Minnesota Care? And I think it's just like when they go to a tax accountant, they're like, well, tell me what I might be able to deduct and what's the credits I might apply for and, you know, what's my best deal? And to me, having them together is the only way that you can actually answer that question for any consumer. Otherwise, you'd have, you know, they'd have to go in one door to try and figure out if you're eligible for this and another door for something else and not really have the full comprehensive picture of what their options are. They always retain the choice of which of all the options they're eligible for they want to take. We made sure that it was in law that you don't have to sign up for medical assistance. Even if you're eligible, you can say, no, I want to pay full freight and I'm going to pick a qualified health plan. And so I think it's important. I think the consumer really likes that one entry point. And I compare that to, for example, our child care system where you can apply for basic sliding fee child care. You could apply to Head Start, or if you have a four-year-old, you can apply for a scholarship, but not for the two-year-old. And I think that's a very confusing process. Where here we have one door in, and you find out what all your options are, and then you make choices. And I think that serves us well. And so I think that we need to. But the other thing I thought we should do is we need to take a little bit of ownership, and because the complexity of the system is more our fault than anything, because we built the complications of Minnesota Care, and mostly it's medical assistance. It's the most complicated program. And we didn't keep up with any IT investments over the last 30, 40 years. You know, when you're using an IT platform that's 30 or 40 years old, I don't care if it's eligibility, you know, for getting, you know, your property tax refunds or whatever it is. If you're on a platform that old, at some point it just falls apart. And part of, I think, the difficulty that we're having is trying to take something that's very complicated and 30 to 40 years old and instantaneously move it up to something that's responsive and quick and on a platform that we're used to as people who use technology all the time. And no matter whether we were in had our own state exchange or went with Minsure, we'd still be facing that same problem because that is the front door in for people qualifying for medical assistance, whether they're disabled, they're elderly, or they're just people who need assistance with health care bills. And so I think we have to just own some of that, and we've done some work. I think, you know, Representative Grunhagen worked with me in the past, and we heard this week another bill that's about streamlining those systems so that we can actually make this a much more manageable system. And you know, I'm not going to say that all the problems were at all related to our complexity. They weren't. They were related to short time frames. They were related to contractor coordination, change in leadership, all kinds of things that we all know about. But I do think we as a committee, at least those of us who have served for a while, have to have a little bit of ownership because we didn't keep up that system while we made other budget choices over time. And I think that has to be acknowledged in the record. It doesn't solve the problem. Doesn't make it any easier to fix it going forward. But I don't think it all falls on the system of trying to get people eligible for example, for the premium tax credits.
All right.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to put that on the record because I felt like I want to own some of the problem because I feel like I and others probably prioritized services to people over computer systems for a long time. No matter who was in charge, I think we've tended to give preference to the people on the waiting list and the people whose heartfelt stories about need and inadequate pay came before us rather than the people who put in a budget request for computers.
Thanks. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers there, I'm going to quickly read an email from a constituent, and she's asked that I share this since I told her this is going on today. In October of 2013, I attempted to sign myself up and my son for health insurance through the Marketplace Exchange. My husband has health insurance through his place of employment, so he did not need it. I put in all the necessary information for all members of my family, myself, my husband, and me, at that time, 7-year-old son, selecting only need coverage for myself and my son. Once I had entered all the information, the decision said that I, myself, qualified for health insurance through the exchange with zero tax credits, and it also told me that my son qualified for medical assistance and I would receive more information in that mail. So silly me, after waiting until December, I figured I must have to choose a policy for myself to kick myself to kick my son into the system. So I chose a policy for myself. I chose a Health Partners policy with a $2,500 a year deductible and a monthly premium of $171.16 a month. I waited a couple of weeks after I had selected my plan and had received all of my paperwork, including insurance cards, but I had yet to receive anything in the mail for my son regarding him being on MA. I decided to make a phone call after sitting on hold for over 5 hours. Yes, I said 5 hours. I finally got someone to answer the phone, only to tell me that I had to actually contact my county. This is where the vicious circle of phone calls started because no one could answer my question. So I called the county. The county told me to leave a message, which I did, and they called me back to tell me I had to call Minsure. No one could answer why I hadn't received any information on my son. They say he's lost in the system, but they don't think he should qualify for MA. So I called back to Minsure, and I called Health Partners to see what could be done about my son getting added to my insurance plan that I had chosen. Health Partners told me since I purchased my policy through the exchange, they couldn't help me. Minsure told me that since I had already chosen a policy, that I could not change my policy, which included adding my son to it. And Minsure doesn't write individual minor policies, so he's just going to have to go without it or find it privately. What I found privately was a policy for $78 a month with a $10,000 a year deductible. So my son went without health insurance for all of 2014 again. My poor boy hasn't had health insurance since he turned one. Because, you see, my family of three makes between $55,000 and $60,000 a year. They think we can afford to buy it at these astronomical prices. And to purchase the health insurance through my husband's job is $735 a month, 1 week of his pay. This year, when the exchange opened up for the 2015 year, I did the same thing, put all the information, selecting that only myself and my son needed coverage, and told me I didn't qualify for any credits and my son qualified for MA. Yep, you guessed it. He still doesn't have coverage, and to purchase coverage through the exchange would cost me $305.95 a month and a $12,600 a year deductible. I don't have that kind of money. I don't know how you want the average hard-working American citizen to pay for it, but not just my son is going to go without health insurance this year. It was a very hard struggle to afford it last year, and we just can't afford it. Please figure out how to get this system reversed. There is nothing affordable about the Affordable Health Care Act. So, to the testifiers, it behooves me to even... I wonder, how do we lay our heads down on our pillows at night, get up in the morning, and say all is well when we look in the mirror, when we know that we have constituents around our district and around the state that are struggling to get through a program that the federal government mandated us to do, but the lawmakers who passed this kept saying it's a Minnesota exchange and we could do things that we want to do. But none of that has come true. She can't afford insurance, and that's just one story. We had a story of a gentleman who lost his wife to death while he was waiting for her to get insurance. So I go through this budget, and I'm like, wow, we're spending a lot of money, a lot more money to bail out a program that we already bailed out last year using healthcare access fund dollars, and now Minnesota Care is in danger. And I just think, members, we just need to, as I've been saying for the last 4 years, we should have never gotten into the exchange, and we should just move straight to the federal exchange and bypass the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Franz, and Mr. Lights. I think we all get emails like this. Every single legislator gets experience emails like this. Most not that long, but every bit is good. every bit as good, about the customer experience. And we had a gentleman in last week who lost his wife and detailed his walk through Minsure. And I said the reason I wanted to have him in was it was like the OLA report in a real person's experience. And that's another, just one of the things that really strikes me is the, you know, the people, really smart people working very, very hard to try to fix very complicated problems. And sometimes we miss the point that it's, there's actual Minnesotans here on the other end of the phone that are really getting hurt. And that's something that's not lost on us, I hope. And you talk about the consumer experience and improving the consumer experience on the front end and call times and that. Can you talk about how much money you're spending on consumer experience and how you're measuring whether you're actually not as Betty getting through in 3 minutes instead of having to stay home from work and be on hold all day, but is Betty actually getting the answer to her question, or is she getting a real person at the end of 5 minutes that says, "Welcome to Minsure. I have absolutely no idea how to help you," which is what we're hearing from the responses. So can you talk a little bit about the consumer experience and about how much are you paying for it, how are you measuring it, and are you doing it qualitatively or quantitatively?
Mr. Chair, there's a number of issues related in that question, so I'll try to sort of tick through what we're doing and how we're trying to measure the improvements there and find out where we can improve. First of all, I can say that we take every circumstance that we're aware of and are made aware of very, very seriously. We are here to make sure that people have the best ability to get in the coverage that they can. And so when we're made aware of issues that your constituents raise or any of the members' constituents raise, we certainly have folks who are on staff to do direct follow-up with those individuals. So I want to make that clear to the members. Secondly, we have worked very hard to improve the consumer experience. And we've done that. You've mentioned sort of a few ways that we've attempted to do that. Part of it is trying to reduce the frustration that people feel about when they call in waiting a long time to be on the phone. And that has improved from a metrics perspective. People are waiting less time than they previously did to get their call answered. But that isn't all of it. Obviously, you raised an important point, which is really when they do get through to call center reps, are they getting the right information? Is that something that they're getting their questions answered on? I would say that in year one, that was a devil of a challenge. Call center reps had, because of the timelines we were on, very, I would say, a limited amount of training to really be able to answer the questions, the very complex questions that come with health insurance coverage. That was a function of a law that was passed and then needed to be implemented in an extraordinarily short period of time. And I think it's fair to say that we, as an organization, didn't always know exactly which questions were going to be answered or even what to train on necessarily. That has improved in year two, as we now have a much better curriculum to really, as we bring people on, to be able to answer the questions that are likely being raised. But I think it's important to note just the overall complexity of the public programs and the private programs and their interaction in Minnesota. It's taken some time to be able to make sure that people who are answering the phones are able to correctly get the information to people, and it's come with some learnings along the way. We have implemented, as any good call center would, the ability to monitor calls to improve quality of calls over time. It's a heavy focus of us and has been over the course of this open enrollment period and will be moving forward. That's a critical aspect of it, is making sure that we're monitoring calls, learning where we can improve around getting correct answers to people when they do call in. We think that has improved substantially compared to where it was year one, but that doesn't mean there's not room for improvement, and I think we will continue to do that. The final piece I would just mention is that we do anticipate being able to field some consumer surveys in the coming days so that we're collecting better information about the experiences that people have as they call into the call center or go through the system. I think that's an important part of the continuous improvement that we try to do as an organization.
And Mr. Lutz, just as a follow-up to that, on the call center, there's an RFP for a new 3-year contract with a vendor to provide backup contracts, call center services. Could you talk a little bit about the decisions on that and how the training is around the quality for that? And I know that that has been controversial, and I don't know if you can do that now, or maybe you can just follow up with the committee on that particular request. But we have had significant problems with, not just, as you say, getting through, but getting accurate information. Getting a live person is comforting after the music, but if they can't help you or they send you in the wrong direction, that's something else. And I can tell you that I had a guy in my office, he's about my age, family, and he just played for me on his iPhone in the recorded voicemails. He had a recorded voicemail from the county, then a recorded voicemail from Minsure, then a recorded voicemail from his carrier, then another recorded voicemail from Minsure, and they were all these fingers getting pointed at each other. And I just put myself in this poor guy's position, and I said, I got up from that meeting, and I thought completely differently about how to approach this, or how we should be approaching this moving forward. And it should be from his perspective or her perspective or from the consumer's perspective, the people who are actually trying to navigate this system. Sometimes when I look through the reports or the budget, it seems like people trying to debug a computer game. And it's a lot of technical stuff and problem solving, but we really are detached from the person at the other end of the phone. And I still see that problem here with the budget and with how we're selecting to move forward with real solutions. So that's more a comment. Representative Lohmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Lights. My questions are very much on the same line as the ones that we've been asking here as far as the consumer experience. And I, you know, as a representative and hearing from constituents and reading these emails and hearing stories, it's just so heartbreaking, and it just, the responsibility we feel, you know, as lawmakers to have played a part in this is just really heavy on my heart. And I had a phone call yesterday, about a half an hour long phone call, with a constituent who told me their story of deciding sometime last fall that because they're small business owners and they've had Blue Cross Blue Shield for about 30 years, but they thought, you know, the rates are going up, maybe it would be a good idea for us to look at Minsure. And so they checked into it, and they thought they would give it a try. And so they did, and come January 21st, this gal needed to have a total knee replacement. So it took them a long time to get their cards so that they could actually know that they had coverage, but they finally got them. They made phone calls to verify that the clinic that they wanted to use, the doctor that they wanted to use, and the surgery center that they wanted to use were all in their network, all going to be okayed. They checked that. The physician checked that, the clinic checked that, everyone verified it several times. They had a $1,000 deductible, and they were asked to prepay $600 because of that, put it on a credit card, and they were good to go. She had her surgery, and then the bills started coming in. And now, instead of her having a $1,000 deductible, she has a $10,000 deductible. And she's like, no, that's not what we have. But everything has changed now since the surgery. So I guess my question is, you know, they have a grievance going in, and I appreciate that you say that people can call, but I'd really like some specifics about who they can call to work with this, and how can this kind of thing happen. I mean, there's so many problems here on so many different levels, and you know, I guess I'd like to know how we can help this constituent and others that have this type of a problem.
Mr. Lights.
Mr. Chair and Representative, there's a number of pathways that a consumer can follow if they happen to be in a situation. Not knowing all the specifics of the situation, I won't be able to answer very specifically the question, but let me tell you sort of generally what folks can do. To the extent that people have a problem with coverage that they've purchased or believe that they've ended up in the wrong program or have ended up not having the right level of advanced premium tax credit, for example, there's an appeals process that they can go through. And that's done through MNsure, although we work with the Department of Human Services in an interagency agreement to have an unbiased folks do the review of the situation and the facts related to it. They can find that right on our website. It's pretty right up front on the website. In the situation you described where there appeared to be some interaction with after they went into coverage and were confused or found that the coverage that they thought they had purchased differed from Blue Cross and they had done all their due diligence around working with their physician, working with the hospital, calling to make sure everything was in network, and it didn't turn out to be the case, there are processes that are in place with the Department of Commerce that they can help to sort of sort through those interactions and grievances with the insurance company itself. MNsure is really a marketplace to get people into the coverage. To the extent that they then have coverage disputes with their carrier, that really falls under a different regulatory scheme within the state system as it's been built and would really be more of a Department of Commerce issue.
Thank you. Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up on something that Representative Lothar brought up. I believe I'm correct that basically Minnesota is the only state that is doing what I call a twofer. We're trying to not only set up the infrastructure, the technological infrastructure for an exchange, a health insurance exchange, but also to clean up this 30 to 40 year old out of date process for the public programs. And basically we decided to go for a twofer and do them at the same time, which is maybe foolish, maybe hopeful, but that's what's causing some of the complications. And when I can't remember if it was Representative Nash or Representative Albright brought in a commercial program that said we can do an exchange, no problem at all. I asked them about public programs. They said, well, we just send them to the county. So they don't even do that part. They only do the one-fer. The overall complexity of both the public programs and the private programs, the situation we have is complicated double over because we're the only state that's trying to solve both these problems at the same time by upping the technology for both of them, which is a good idea, but complicates the situation to no end and makes us more complicated. But anytime anybody says, well, let's just bring in this private program, they can do an exchange, no problem, cheaper. They don't remember that what that commercial program will do is simply send the public programs to the county and not work with that at all, which is one of the things we want to do. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lane, we are one of a handful of states that kind of took on that bigger challenge. States have done different things as to how they've integrated the commercial piece of the Affordable Care Act with their Medicaid program. And some states have gone a little bit closer to what we're doing, which is really the full integration. Some states have a lot more kind of an interface or a throw it over the wall kind of approach, some of which haven't worked very well. But fundamentally, the Affordable Care Act does require that you have a single place for people to go to apply for coverage and that there be that way for people to get into the Medicaid program or to get into a commercial product. And so each state has figured out different ways to do that, and some work better than others. And our approach was a fully integrated approach. And I think, as you said, that was really we saw this as an opportunity to look for a modernization of what a project we needed to do anyway, which was to move forward on our eligibility for public programs. In addition, even if we had decided not to do this, we would have needed to spend a bunch of money on our old mainframe system in order to somehow link it into whatever the marketplace was doing. And that would have been sunk dollars that wasn't moving us forward anywhere. And I think to your point, and sort of Representative Loeffler talking about the vision or the strategy, I think we bit off a lot, and I think the fact that things didn't go well initially was probably partly because maybe we bit off more than we should in terms of how we played this out. But fundamentally, we're trying to go, I think, in the right direction.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lights, just some questions just to focus in on your outreach programs and the advertising throughout the next year or so. Just curious on what your budget, I was trying to look into the budget on just advertising, and I realize...
Representative McDonald. Yes, Allison O'Toole to join me at the table just because she's been more involved in that. So I didn't mean to interrupt you, please.
No, thank you. Absolutely, Mr. Lights. I I appreciate calling up some extra help. So I just want to find out what the budget is on some future advertising, outreach programs, talk a little bit about, I think, you know, there's some areas that I think in Minshew that's going to be very tough, it's, as you know, going to be very tough to focus in on and try to get a handle on, very daunting task. And I don't doubt personally that you are doing your best work, and certainly I would agree with the governor. He has the right man for the job, right person, excuse me. So and our thoughts and prayers and everything are with you and finding what's best for this organization. So I'll continue not to ramble on, but I think there's one area that we can focus on that you have some control, and that's the advertising, the grants, some oversight, and ensuring that every dollar spent is working. So what are the budgets on your outreach programs and advertising in the next coming years? And then will you continue, or why haven't you done an audit, or why haven't we seen an audit on those outreach programs? I can give you the numbers. You certainly have the numbers, too. But, you know, they spent over almost $500 million on outreach programs with, as you know, little success. So what are the goals going forward?
Mr. Lights.
Yeah, I'm happy to.
I'm sorry, please Scott. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed with answering Mr. McDonald's question. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm Allison O'Toole. I'm the Deputy Director for External Affairs at Minshew. And Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, I'm happy to answer your questions. I'll take the advertising question first. We are in the midst of refining our budget for this upcoming open enrollment, which begins in November. It will be trimmed down quite a bit, so probably around a media buy of $2 million, which is about half of what we've been spending to date. So we will continue, but we're trimming every day, and we're also learning every day. And I think it has been shown that our awareness is pretty great, and so we can afford to trim. On the outreach and enrollment grants, we are in the midst of our second round of grants right now. And again, we learned a lot from last year, and we put some different processes and much more structure in place for the second round. We have to ensure accountability, and we want to make sure that our money is spent wisely and that it's working. So we're working very closely with grantees this time around to make sure they're actually reaching our target audiences and helping people enroll. We added a handful of staff members, just three staff members to manage our grants, and they've just completed site visits with our grants, which is essentially an internal audit of those. So we're waiting for results on those, and we will tweak and refine budgets and work plans as necessary based on that.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. O'Toole, did you do an audit then of your past grantees? And were the grantees, I'll stop there for a moment.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, we, did do tweaking and certainly a review and evaluation of our first year grants, but we made changes to the program right after open enrollment last year. So we have while we're evaluating, we're also making changes. So while it wasn't a formal audit, we definitely have made significant changes about accountability.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll just ask a series of questions then.
That's all right.
Yeah. Just to follow up then, excuse me, on your grantees was, I'm just looking at the auditor's report, Mr. Lights, of 126, regarding the vendors. Are you planning to use the same vendors then for those grantees and the advertising? And the reason I ask this is because under the auditor's report, it is obvious that they were not successful in the amount of money putting forward. And I think if there's any area that you can control, because it seems uncontrollable in some areas, that's one you can control. And so are the grantees that you're going to give more money to are the same people, same grantees that you gave money to in the past?
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, thanks. We were just discussing. We want to make sure we had what you're talking about. I think you're talking about the grantees who receive funds to do sort of the outreach and the work enrolling people in the programs, right? And are we having that same group receiving grants year after year? There is some overlap on some of the organizations, although every year that we go out with a new round of grants, those are open for application, and they're it's a competitive process that they apply for the funds, and then we base that funding on the strength of the applications that come in. As Ms. O'Toole mentioned, we learned a lot from the first year of this thing around kind of areas that work, but then areas that just didn't work very well, and made a lot of tweaks on the accountability side, added more oversight directly to the program, and also wanted to make sure that we were doing things like site visits, which are essentially internal audits of the organizations that are coming up. I think it's our intention to fully continue both with those things, but add additional accountability measures to that. Ultimately, what we want to see is dollars that are spent towards getting people enrolled. We understood that in year one, some of this is going to be infrastructure building for some of these organizations. A thing that we encouraged in year two and continue to encourage is partnerships between these organizations so that we can leverage whatever strengths that are in the community across that community to do that. And so we'll see what the applications response to the RFP look like for year three, but there's certainly no guarantee that organizations, whether they were funded in year one or year two, will be funded in year three, and certainly past experience will be help us as a guide in some of that evaluation.
Mr. Chair, then lastly, thank you, Mr. Lights. So, Ms. O'Toole, you said that, was it accurate in that I heard $2 million is what you're going to budget for advertising?
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, that will be our media buy. That's our planned media buy for the fall, yes.
Mr. Chair, so according to the auditor, I think, in Mr. Lights, if this number is correct, $2,114,000, was that correct for the last advertising for the 2013-14?
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, that does sound correct. I'd have to look at the particulars, but that sounds accurate.
And of that amount, there was $1.6 million primarily for developing and purchases and advertising.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, that's correct. And going forward, we have invested in that development, and we don't anticipate having those same costs for next year.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. O'Toole, really, we're not spending any less, I mean, maybe $114,000 less on advertising than. And the reason I ask this is I recognize you dropped your Babe and Blue Ox, or the, you know, Paul Bunyan and the Babe. You dropped that campaign. It wasn't a success. It was a success, according to the legislator's auditor's report, that it got people aware of MnSure, but it certainly was a failure when it got people to sign up for MnSure. So it achieved half of your goal. So I hope, Mr. Lights, and I'll watch this area closely personally as long as I'm in this seat, the dollars spent on advertising and outreach. Other members will focus on areas that they're experts. I can't do it all, so I'm going to watch this, and I'll leave it up to you to make sure that those dollars are spent wisely, and maybe you can address that money spent on the advertising.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I don't think we could agree more. I think that what we did find in year one was that the original focus was really on awareness building. It largely did that for good or for bad. It built awareness of the availability of MnSure in year one. We really pivoted in year two and focused more heavily on the enrollment piece. That's where our goal is really around making sure that folks get enrolled. And I think some of the development work that we would have paid for in the past, we won't have to do this year because it's not as necessary to continue to build that awareness. What we really need to do right now is ensure that people understand the availability of coverage, the availability of financial assistance, and then getting folks into coverage. And I appreciate your comments and making sure that the dollars that are spent in those areas are well focused. We know those are very valuable dollars, and we want to make sure every dollar that we're spending is getting a person into coverage as much as we possibly can. So appreciate your comments, and that's very much where our focus intends to be moving forward on this.
Thank you. Representative Schoen.
Mr. Chair, you know, I just take this moment. You know, every time these poor folks come in, you know, they kind of get poked in the eye, and we rehash what's gone on since the inception, and today they're, you know, here to talk about what they've done and what's going to happen moving forward. I mean, You know, we're the IT overview is, I kind of looked at this and discussed it. It almost looks like an oil refinery, an electronic oil refinery. All these pieces have to work together. They're pretty complicated. And, you know, we hear so many times that, oh, we put together a $300 million website and we go down that path. You know what? It's certainly a lot more complicated than that. That is one small piece of it. We've got examples of folks around here that tried to run a website and it didn't go so well to find summer camps for kids. But, you know, every time I've had a complaint about their interaction, our constituents have contacted me, I've been able to help them. And they've been happy that they got signed up. It wasn't an easy process. And every time when I hear this year, they're like, yeah, it took a little bit, but it was a better result. And, you know, we're here from stories where constituents have complaints about their premiums. Well, it's not Minsure's fault that premiums in the United States of America rose across the board. We know that. But it is Minsure's responsibility and great work that has been done that we have the cheapest rates in the nation. And if you want to take your constituents and talk about high premium costs, look across the river where they're sometimes up to 80% higher, and then go to your business owners that have to go out and compete with and find insurance for their employees after that once this competition is gone. So really, you know, we need to get back to what are we fixing, and I'm looking forward to hearing about that and how much better it's going. So,
Representative Zerwas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Light, thank you for joining us today. You know, I understand, you know, looking forward and focusing on the positive and I understand that. You know, I heard Representative Lane say, you know, we're trying for, you know, we're one for two and we're doing this and we're signing up people for the county and this, and a private system would only do this. And members, let's be clear. They had two jobs: enroll people into Minsure as a part of the health insurance exchange and enroll people into the public programs. They're using paper applications for the public enrollment plans that Representative Lane was bragging about, and they're at 10% of enrollment projections for the private plans. So we're not talking a two for two or a one for two. We're an offer. We're an offer, members, not a one-fer. And I think that needs to be explicit. To try to paint this as, well, we kind of did good. No, members, we didn't kind of do good. This has been an abject failure from day one to present. The OLA report has said that. If you're denying that, your head is in the sand. Mr. Lights, one of the things the OLA pointed out pretty specifically is that four groups received a combined total of $400,000 for public outreach to go out into the community and enroll people. And for that $400,000, we got 175 enrollees, $2,800 per enrollee. Is this, Mr. Wrights, an example of success?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, absolutely not. I mean, I think what you're raising there is very much what we just had a discussion earlier about. That is information that we absolutely are going to need to take into account as we move forward and think about how we target these dollars. As I said earlier, it's very important for us to know. I think in year one, there was a lot of things that we learned that we can do differently. So I absolutely would not say that was success.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zerwas.
So looking at the goals for enrollment and the amount of money that was given to organizations in year one, when you went back out for year two, did you disqualify some groups, or did you give the same failing groups
more money.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as I mentioned earlier, I believe there was likely some new organizations and some overlap of previous organizations.
Representative Ross.
So, Mr. Lights, were those abject, abysmal performances counted in some type of metric to whether or not they got more money to literally flush down the drain? Or did some of those failing companies that or failing organizations that wholly missed their targets, did you give them grant money a second time?
Mr. Lights.
Mr. Chair and Representative, my recollection is that there are organizations that were funded in year one. There were some of those who were funded in year two and some who were not. I don't know which one specifically off the top of my head, but I believe that there was some overlap.
Mr. Chair. One organization said their outreach activities reached $2,760,505 Minnesotans, 27,695% of their initial goal. Do you think that's an accurate report back to you, Mr. Lights?
Mr. Lights.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I don't have that specific information in front of me, so it's difficult for me to comment on that.
Gazeros.
All right, Mr. Lights, you know, if these groups, then let's say that the information that they reported to you and you reported out was accurate, if they were able to reach nearly 3 million Minnesotans with their outreach activities, if they were that successful, then why do we fund the $1 million, $2 million multimedia campaign if we're reaching almost $2.8 million in just the outreach grants, or 2.8 million Minnesotans in just the outreach grants. If that is that successful and we're not disputing those numbers, then why do both?
Mr. Chair, Representative, again, I don't have that specific information in front of me. My suspicion is if that's been reported, that's obviously an inaccuracy, but I don't have that in front of me, so it's difficult for me to comment on.
Mr. Chair and members, I guess I get frustrated because we have these hearings, and I understand, members, at a point, we have to pivot, and we have to look forward, and I totally get that. But what I can't get is Chair Dean has had members in here that have seriously and personally and individually been harmed and wounded by the disaster that has been the operation of the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange. And then you say, well, you know, it's a one for. No. Members, we're over. We're $300 million later, and we're in over. Where our counties are now reporting to us the change of status, the stuff that I used to do in 5 minutes takes me 90 minutes. And if you want to count that as a success for the public programs, well, I'm not willing to count that as a success for enrollment for public programs. There are real problems. There are real issues. We spent an entire year last session with amendment after amendment after amendment. And those weren't germane. Those weren't timely. Those weren't important enough to discuss. And people died.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will try to do what Representative Zerwa said and work on the pivot here for a minute, because I just have a couple questions with some of the documents we've had in front of us. So I will try to be succinct, and if we have to do follow-up, because I have a few questions, we can do that. But I'm looking at the document that you guys provided that has to do with some of the initial grant applications from MNsure to CMS, and there's a series in here of pages where CMS asked questions and MNsure responded, and I'm trying to see exactly what page I'm on, but it's question number 6 where CMS asked about some of the contracts a contract with Curum specifically. And one thing I'm understanding is that the current contract with Curum is wrapping up here at the end of March. And one of the things that MNsure puts out in this answer to CMS is that IBM Kirim is currently under contract through 331 to deliver remaining functionality for the Minsure solution. And I believe this was prepared last December. And so I guess I'm wondering, here it says they're to deliver remaining functionality for the Minsure solution. What was envisioned in terms of what Kirim is delivering on, and do we have that? March 31st is just a few days away. And so I'm wondering, what does functionality mean in this answer from Minsure to CMS? And are we there when we're 4 days out from March 31st?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mack, the contract for IBM actually doesn't expire until April 30th. And we're currently working through the process. The way the contract was written was in a manner, because of the vast amount of unknowns within the project itself and the amount of issues that we were having at the time when this contract was created. It was created in a manner that the business could swap functionality and things within the contract to enable rapid change and delivery of different functions. So the existing functionality they're delivering right now toward the end of the month is the starting on the life event functionality, as well as the task management functionality that the counties have discussed. There's also additional defect functionality that they continue to work around the eligibility rules themselves. We can provide a comprehensive list of what that calls.
So, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. And so, yeah, if there's further detail, so you would say that functionality will not be completed. And so this must be a typo on here that it says that the contract's through March 30th. You said April 30th. So is that contract with Kirim going to be re-upped? It sounds, obviously, the life event functionality does not sound even close to being towards finality or fixed. So is that contract going to be re-upped by Kirim? And if so, when is their deadline for having those life event fixes in place and behind us?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the contract is currently being negotiated now for the remaining functionality with IBM. They've been tasked with the highest priority items, the business, when I say business, I mean counties, DHS, and Minsure defined from life of functionality. They identified six that were the most critical that would be delivered by July.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'm just curious, when you say life event functionality, that's happening on both sides of Minsure, both in the QHP and the public program. Is Kirim addressing both sides of that coin? And if not, who's responsible for which side?
Mr. Chair, Representative, you're correct. They're addressing both sides.
Okay, and so that's one of the six critical issues that's supposed to be addressed by July. Is that what I'm understanding?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, the six most critical items that were identified by the counties, the DHS and Minsure, will be corrected by July. That's on the current schedule.
Okay, thank you. And those kind of specific goal lines are very helpful for us to know, just to understand. So I really appreciate your transparency on that. Other question is, I'm looking at the budget narrative that you gave us, supplemental adjustment request, and there is on the budget narrative on page 7 of that document at the very top, it talks about the supplemental adjustment is limited to the completion of the IT system, and then it goes on and it basically says complete the project within scope by 12/31 of 2015. I'm wondering, what does within scope mean? What's the deliverable on 12/31 of 2015?
Mr. Chair, Representative, so the deliverable, the scope, is defined in the existing RFP that was released and awarded. So the scope that was originally written, clearly we know a lot more now than we did when that was released, and that continues to be refined with CMS and IBM.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, as we go a little bit further into that document, I'm just curious about one piece. There's some stuff here on audit functionality on page 11 of that document where it talks about there's a need to enhance the log infrastructure, and it says, it's in quotations, a who looked at my records. And I'm wondering if you could just shed a little light. I remember pretty specifically a Legislative Oversight Committee hearing back in 2013 where I asked a lot of questions about what was in place to have fingerprints on who had access what data at any given time within the MNCHR system and all this new data being collected. My understanding that something like that was up and running from the start of MNCHR, this would lead me to believe that that has not been in place. So is that the case? Has that not existed and it's still something that's getting rolled out? Or what does this piece mean in the budget?
Mr. Peter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it actually exists today. However, it's a very cumbersome process, and it's essentially going into data sources throughout the exchange and then collating the data. This is an effort to be able to streamline that process and provide visibility that we need in the system.
Okay.
And I just had a follow-up question on page 10 of 18 of the same document. You have Prime IT vendors, and you have Deloitte, Connecture, and EngagePoint. You do not have Curum on that. How are you paying them, and where are you accounting for that?
Mr. Chair, when we developed this document originally, as has been said, they were currently under contract, and we were working through identifying the skill sets we needed. We took the numbers for the vendors that we had on site, including Deloitte, Connecture, and EngagePoint at the time, and those dollars would be allocated as the scope changes within the document to IBM or any other vendor that would be necessary to complete the build.
All right. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one more, just brief questions. On the document from Minute Services, this is very helpful. Thank you for the flow charts. I guess the one question or maybe concern, and I don't know, as I'm looking at the MNCHR IT governance and the Executive Steering Committee, it talks about it's a joint committee of senior level management from MNCHR, DHS, and Minute. And I guess I'm just wondering, is it concerning at all that there's no one from the plans on that executive steering committee? Because I see that part of it is that it oversees communications with the county's insurance carriers and navigators and brokers. And I know that the plans have been pretty intrinsic in working with MNCHR to try to get things up and working. And it's just surprising me that there's no one from the plans on that executive steering committee and seems to be an oversight or a problem.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mack, I'll start it. I'll ask Chuck and Scott to add additional information. The steering committee is one that ultimately we have governance responsibility for actually delivering on things. And so we obviously want to ensure that the process that we have in place inside of the overall management of MNCHR is one where we're coordinated and that we have clear point people and are setting very clear priorities. But we know there are external partners who either use the system heavily or that we partner with very, very closely in that. And so we, while they're not members of the committee, I can tell you that we meet weekly with the health plans to take their input. We've spent, I think it was a 2.5-hour session to walk them through the technical pieces of what the build-out looks like. We also have a technical advisory committee of the plans that reports with Minute to give input into those processes. So we very much need that input. We very much are taking that input and including it in the process. So you're absolutely right. They're critical partners in this.
Okay. Mr. Chair, final word. I appreciate that. That's good to know. I just, it seems like they're a key partner in this. And also have stakes in it as well, and so probably are interested in its success and working more smoothly. I guess one thing that would be helpful, and you've done a little bit of this today, which is great, but one of the things on here is 2015 IT focus areas. And I think it clarifies that this is a preliminary roadmap. But I guess some of the goal dates are helpful to know. Some of these things are really great to see that they're getting worked on, but just having no reference, and I understanding it's a changing animal, but it just helps to know and I think set things even for the county workers and the plans and things like that when they can start to plan for some of these fixes to be in place, and also just in terms of accountability. And then the only other piece, I had time for more questions, but it's hard to know what some of these goals are in terms of what's relating to the QHP and what's relating to public and on some of the IT stuff, because they're very different things. Some of them relate, but they're different challenges. And so, you know, it's one of the reasons why I think it could be in our best interest to, you know, make nestle some of the public program stuff back within DHS. Minsure, I think, did take on more than it can handle, and it did afford us the money to upload and modernize some of our IT systems. But at this point, it's not serving anyone real well. Is there hope for that, particularly in our public programs? I sure hope so, because we need it, but we're still a long ways from that, where I think some county workers are longing for the old days of their DOS systems versus all of the paperwork that they're having to do. And so just some delineation in terms of the public programs and the QHP side, because they have different challenges, I think would be helpful in terms of knowing what we're shooting for and what is yet to be done. So it's something I can be in touch with you on. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mack. We are at 2:30, and I understand the DFL caucus has a caucus at 2:30?
Chance? Real quick one,
excellent.
Mr. Chair.
We can go for a couple more minutes.
Real quick one?
Yeah. As is Representative Hamilton, as is Representative Murphy, as is Representative Grunhagen. Representative Hamilton.
One question, one comment, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Mr. Leitz, there's a bill that's been introduced to completely eliminate Minsure. Do you support that bill?
Mr. Leitz.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, my board has not taken any position on legislation this year.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Leitz. I like to be as educated on an issue as I possibly can, and if I don't have a general understanding of it, it's very difficult to support it. And I know we've talked about this, and I guess this is just some friendly advice. If the chairs or others are asking for specific information, specific requests, please deliver on those specific requests as we continue to discuss this and make decisions moving forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to confess something to you, that I don't have my committee rules in my packet anymore. So I don't know if this would be against the rules, but I think when we're talking about Minsure, it would be, you know, smart if each side got a poster board and we could put them up and stipulate the arguments that we've already had over and over again, so we don't have to keep having them about, you know, when we got started and why we didn't get started and the amendments and how many amendments, because we just keep hashing that over and we just disagree, and you know, we could just put them up and then be done with it. What do you think?
Well, I think you and I could probably have a debate about that. It might be fun. I don't know. We gotta figure out what to do moving ahead.
So,
and
have to do.
I don't know if Mr. Some of us have some bills to fix Minsure. Some go farther than others. I have a bill. We could talk about that. And that's really what we're looking at, is we have a budget. Our committee has to put a budget together. We're going to have to deal with this in our public programs and how we deal with people who we assist with buying health insurance is going to figure in a big, big way in our budget. So we got to figure this out, but more than anything else, I think we need to focus in on the people that aren't getting helped right now, and that's got to be dollar one and minute one.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have just a couple of questions then. We have talked a lot about the year one and year two, and as I understand it, and I've spent some time talking with and visiting Minsure itself to understand what's happening, and it appears to me that we're on a trajectory of improvement, and I think that's important to note, since we've made an investment of time and tax dollars. So these are two questions that I have for Mr. Leitz and all, and you may or may not be able to answer them now, but I would like your thought and your advice on these. First of all, have you or your staff calculated what it would cost for Minnesota to move into a federal exchange?
Mr. Light.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, we independently have not. It's my understanding that there has been a fiscal note request, I believe, on that, and I believe that's being worked on in an interagency way.
Thank you for that. So I'll wait and watch for that. And then you know, there's talk about Minsure and staying the course and talking about moving into a federal exchange. But one thing that I haven't asked you yet on the record, and again, for your thinking, is what as a legislature, if we stay the course, what as a legislature can and should we be doing to make Minshew the success that we want it to be?
Mr. Lights.
Mr. Chair and Representative, first of all, I want to say that we, I think through all of the challenges that we had in the initial rollout of Minshew, I think have appreciated, I think, the vigorous debate and discussion and support of, I think that shared across many, many perspectives of getting as many people into coverage as possible, since I think everybody recognizes that that's a very, very important thing to do. I think it's been talked about earlier that this is a challenge, as we've discovered, a really challenging build-out of a complex series of programs that have been built over a number of years. And I think I've certainly gained an understanding and recognition of the challenges of doing such a build on a relatively short timeline against what are typically fairly longer-term build-outs that IT projects typically have. So I don't know that I have a specific answer to your question other than to say we recognize that what's been done so far in integrating, creating an integrated place for people to get an eligibility determination and getting them into coverage has been a large undertaking. And I think you're correct. We believe we have made good progress towards that, recognizing that there are still challenges that we have to face. We're trying to lay those out as clearly as possible and to articulate, I think, the timeline and the pathway for remedying those challenges moving forward. So I hope that that's helpful in some way.
Thank you, Mr. Lights. And then just a comment. This committee, all the committees of this legislature have important work to do, and what we do matters a lot. And when I used to work as a nurse, of course, we knew that people's lives were in our hands. And then when I worked for the Nurses Association, we would sometimes say to one another, we can be calm because someone's lives aren't in our hands. But that's not the case here. People's lives are in our hands, and the decisions that we make are important. And I feel it a lot here. I had a two-year bit of a break from this committee, and I'm glad I'm back, but I'm feeling a lot the burden, right, of what we have to do and what we face in the next couple of weeks or 4 weeks, I suppose, in terms of putting together this budget with the target that we have and what that means for human lives. So, you know, when I think about Minshew, I certainly know the stories of people who struggled to get their coverage, and we know that story well. I also know stories of people who are successfully covered now and happy. And I think both those stories are important, and I'm paying attention to them both. And I think that we have just to be humble about the challenge in front of us and the impact of the decisions we're going to have to make on human lives, and maybe be kind with one another about that politically, because we have a big job in front of us, and people could be hurt by the decisions that we're going to make, just like some are arguing people have been hurt by decisions that have been made in the past. So that's all I'll say.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mack, I appreciate your line of questions, and I think that's very, very good. I've been very frustrated in this committee as well, that every time we bring up this topic, we kind of hear the same tired rhetoric. And I just raised my hand after Representative Zerwas's theatrics around this, and kind of, you know, every time this comes up, some members take the opportunity to kind of drag up the past and call it names. And certainly I think that a lot of that rhetoric is just pure fiction, because we do know that there are challenges. But to say that no good has been done and that it's a disaster and all that clearly, clearly is not true. In this committee, we heard a lot of rhetoric earlier on about how some of us look forward. We don't want to look back. Let's not look back at the past. Don't talk about what happened when we were in charge of the legislature. We're only going forward. Well, you know, I think there's a role for looking back and there's a role for looking forward. But right now, talking about Minshew, you know, we can't stop the mistakes that were made in the past, that Minshew wasn't rolled out well, that there were communication issues, that we, the legislature, didn't start early enough to give the huge IT package a chance to be done. I had a meeting with the folks from IBM this week, and they said to me, this was really an impossible challenge for that short timeline. It should have been a couple of years earlier, because that's the kind of IT challenge this was. Well, I think that what we have here today, Mr. Peterson came here with a presentation for us about what the plan is that we could actually look at, learn about, and evaluate what their plan is. And I think Representative Mack was trying to direct her questions to that. And that is the only thing that we have under our control now, is what to learn about what their plan is and to try to impact that plan or derail the plan, whatever your pleasure is going to be here. But going back is and rehashing this stuff is and being unwilling to look forward is not going to help a single Minnesotan. And so I'm with Representative Murphy. I hope we can kind of stop rehashing that old rhetoric. And we all agree, we have never denied that there were challenges and that things didn't go as well. We do disagree about some things about the dynamic of how it came to be. But the reality is that here they are, having made extensive plans and changes about what they want to go forward with, and we didn't even give them time to present that to us. And Mr. Chair, I hope we can allocate some other time, because I think it's important for members to be able to actually hear the presentation that they came here to give us, so that maybe we can at least have a basis for asking some other questions about what's going to happen moving forward. And or decide if you hear the plans and then you don't like them, then you're in different territory. But, you know, I again, thank you to Representative Mack for at least seeming to be, and Mr. Chair, you as well, for seeming to be interested in actually the reality of where we are and where we're going to go. Because as far as I'm aware, that's the only really thing that we can deal with at this point.
Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a couple easy questions, I think. what were the final enrollment numbers, public versus private? Do you know right offhand? Last time we reported, we were told that you didn't quite have the final numbers. That was a month or so ago.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, if you give me 2 seconds, I'll look them up here. Let me give you through March 8th. This will be through March 8th. 183,018 enrollments through the open enrollment period, so that would be November 15th through March 8th. Of that amount, 90,839 were new MA enrollees. 3,170 were new Minnesota Care enrollees, and 61,109 were private plan enrollees.
So percentage-wise, last report we had, nine, or Mr. Chair, CEO Lights, last time 91% were public programs, 9% private. What's the percentage breakdown now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, so of the percentage-wise of the new enrollment, it runs about one public program enrollee for every two public, one private enrollee for every two public program.
Okay.
So 33%, 66%.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Thanks for that information. I will say I finally had a positive comment about Minsure. Okay, it's hard for me to admit that, but I did from a customer. So just to let you know, I'm not completely negative. But the other thing I want to clarify is, yes, I was on a committee with Representative Loeffler dealing with the county's old technology system. At that time, it was estimated $30 to $35 million is the figure I remember to update it statewide, and we're a long ways from that. Also, I just had some of those county workers that were on our committee from Sibley County up in my office, and they say that the ACA has made things more difficult and it takes longer than under the old system. So that kind of confirms what other people have said. But here's the clarification I'd like. You know, I don't understand how all these people get paid, all these vendors get paid, when they do such a lousy job. And let me give you an example. I have a small insurance office. I just paid about close to $5,000 to update my technology in my office. Now, I didn't write them a check, okay, until they completed the job and it was working. And one of the vendors had to come back about six or seven times. In fact, I lost my phone service one day because of something they had wired, and which I have a real short fuse in that area, let me tell you. But, you know, when you're chief cook and bottle washer, the owner of the place. But but I didn't pay them until I was satisfied that what they had done was working. Now, the vendor that had to come back about six or seven times, he tacked on a bunch of extra charges to his bill for doing that. And, him and I had a very... Let's say we had a conversation, okay? And he finally saw it my way that I wasn't going to pay him that extra, okay? I mean, I signed a contract to complete a job that was supposed to be work, and I'm not paying you extra when you're not doing the job. You know, we're paying figures like Gruber, $300,000, tax dollars, from people who are trying to pay their electricity bills, buy clothes for their children, and make the mortgage payment. And then millions more to vendors who, when they're done with their work, okay, it doesn't work. Why are we paying these people? Are we trying to get some of that money back? And if not, why not? And all we do is come to the legislature and say, well, we need another $11 million. Well, how about going back to some of those people who didn't do a decent job and getting some of that money back? I mean, if I ran my business that way, I'd been bankrupt 30 years ago. Would you like to respond to that?
Well, I think you'd be happy to, but I think we also got to wrap up because we got to scoot out of this room in about 1 minute. And I just want to just thank you for coming. Also, I want to just say we appreciate the minute presentation where you got that in our packets. We're going to be looking over that, and we'll want to respond. But really wanted to make sure to be able to provide answers to questions before we go into our budget, really about where the roadmap is, not so much about the technical aspects of proposals that are currently on the table, but really where the roadmap is and whether we switch inevitably to a federal exchange or whether we fix Minsure or whatever the future may hold, that we do so with the least amount of disruption to Minnesotans that have already had the rug pulled out from underneath them. And that's what my focus is going to be on, is to try to really focus on helping people get coverage they can depend on for the next 6 years. And so I really would appreciate any help from the committee in doing that, to focus on the customer experience. And also just want to encourage Minsure to really reach out to customers, to survey them, to hear from them, to not bring in a Minsure success story at the beginning of every board meeting. I think that's really out of touch with what everybody else is seeing in the news, and to try to really rattle the cage and figure out what's going on with people, because we're frustrated. You can feel the frustration in the members and also with Minnesotans regarding this moving forward. But the last people that need to get punished for this, with all the fingers getting pointed between Minsure, between the county, between the legislature, between CMS and the federal's legislation, the people caught in the middle, the people getting that are seeing those fingers pointed, are people without insurance, or people trying to get insurance, or people worried about their family. So I think that's the charge of this committee, to try to figure that out pronto and to get a plan put together for the next 2 years. So thank you for coming in. We're going to study the minute presentation. Sorry we didn't have time for that today, but hopefully we will in a future committee hearing. Thank you. With that, we are adjourned.